Edutainment Learning is powered by Academica Virtual Education and Collegia TV. For more information, visit www.edutainmentlearning.com.
My name is Guy Kawasaki. I am the chief evangelist of a company called Canva, which is online design services based in Sydney, Australia, though I am in California. And I'm also the host of the Remarkable People podcast. In a prior life, I worked for Apple, Google, Mercedes-Benz. So I'm old. I've been around the block. And how did I get this? I don't know. Just keeping at it, pursuing things that interested me, and some became passions.
Do you mind if we jump into student questions so we don't take too much of your time?
No, go for it.
So Carla, and I believe Carla's in France, she messaged me. She wanted to know, what is the most important lesson that you have learned in all of the different experiences you've had in your life?
You I know it's any a hard lot. Questions.
I know it's a lot.
Well, probably the most important lesson in terms of business anyway, is that you should never ask people to do something that you would not do. Now, this presumes that you're not a, you know, psychopath, nutcase, idiot, but let's make that assumption. But with that assumption, you know, you should always ask yourself, am I asking employees to do something I wouldn't do? Are you asking customers to do something that you wouldn't do? Are you asking vendors to do something that you wouldn't do? And if it ever comes out that just, you know, you're saying, oh, God, I wouldn't do that, but I'm asking my customers to do that, your alarm bells should go off. And I'll give you a simple example. I mean, who among us likes CAPTCHA, right? So, you know, click on all the pictures with a school bus in it, or try to type in these letters, and it's not clear if the letters are uppercase, lowercase. They might not even be English. I mean, who knows? So who likes CAPTCHA? And so you don't like CAPTCHA, but you're telling your customers to join using CAPTCHA. That's a very good test.
So one of the kids, this is Jose, and Jose is in Spain. He wanted to know, if you had to pick one project that you've worked on throughout your life, what is the one that you're most proud of?
By far, it is my podcast. So this is the last project of my life. And I just believe that sort of all my life has been preparing me for this moment, because to do a podcast like I'm doing, which interviews remarkable people, it takes like a bunch of factors. And think of this as a Venn diagram. So factor number one is, do you have access to people like Jane Goodall? That took 40 years. And then the second is, do you have the background to ask Jane Goodall insightful questions? That took 40 years. And the third is, do you have the courage to ask the questions you really should ask? And then the fourth is, can you get them to answer? So if you drew concentric circles, I think that I'm one of the few people that is in the overlap of all four circles.
And guys, check out his podcast. It's on Apple, and check out, you can also find it through guykawasaki.com. And we're going to send that out when we send out this video. One of our kids wanted to know, growing up, what were some subjects that you enjoyed in school?
I grew up in Honolulu, Hawaii. I went to a college prep school. I come from a lower middle class family in Hawaii. And, you know, luckily, an elementary school teacher told my parents to take me out of the public school system in Hawaii and put me into the college prep school system. And that was a major turning point in my life. Now, to be honest, I think my favorite subject in high school was football, not soccer, American football. I love football. And, you know, there was only two seasons in my life. There was football season and preparing for football season. Now, having said that, I obviously got good enough grades to get into college. And as I look back, you may find this counterintuitive, but you know, the question was, what are my favorite subjects? As I look back, one of the subjects that I hated the most was English. And now that I look back, one of the subjects that was the most valuable was English. And I had one of the hardest teachers in English, which at the time I hated. But now looking back, I've come to believe that the bosses and the teachers that are the hardest teach you the most. Now, it may take you 20 years to figure this out, but with hindsight, the teachers that were easy and the bosses that are easy, they don't teach you much.
One of our kids over in Latvia, they messaged and they wanted to know that I'm interested in working in sales. Do you have any advice for me as I go off and go into that industry?
Yeah. Well, I fundamentally believe there are only two primary functions in business. One is to make something. The second is to sell it. So if you're not an engineer, you better be good in sales. And if you are an engineer, you find somebody who's good in sales and vice versa, right? So if you are an engineer, find sales. If you're sales, find engineering. And I think that the greatest experience for sales, which is something that I learned first, was rejection. And so I could make the case that any kind of sales position, which involves a lot of rejection, is a good experience in the long run. In the short run, you might think it's painful, it's not financially rewarding, et cetera, et cetera. But dealing with rejection in sales is a very important skill. Because you want to be the first salesperson at the next Google, where people are just like jumping through hoops and begging you to take their money. That situation has happened in history, but let's face it, there's only been one Google. So that's not the norm, and you need to prepare for the norm, which is a lot of rejection.
Can you talk, the kids, they wanted to know about your work with Apple. Can you talk a little bit about that experience?
Sure. I worked for Apple twice. The first time I was Apple's software evangelist. So my job was to convince companies to make software and hardware products. The second time, I'm going to sneeze.
You go right ahead. This is normal. It's fine.
Luckily, I have a mute button. The second time I worked for Apple, I was Apple's chief evangelist. So the second time was when Apple was supposed to die. And because Apple was supposed to die, they brought me back to convince the Macintosh community that Apple isn't going to die. So in both cases, I was an evangelist. Evangelist comes from a word bringing the good news. So I brought the good news of Macintosh, how it would make people more creative and productive. Now I'm chief evangelist of Canva, and I'm bringing the good news of how Canva increases your ability to communicate by enabling you to become a good graphics designer.
And definitely, guys, check out Canva if you haven't already. I love Canva. Great product. And that's not a plug. They're not paying me for that. This is honest because I use it. So... One of the kids want to know, how did you ever deal with any setbacks professionally?
I cannot tell you that I've had like really just traumatic, bash your head against the wall, you know, amazingly horrific stories of setbacks, right? So, you know, they're not going to make a movie about my life because I got airlifted out of South Vietnam on the last helicopter that left the American embassy. And then they dropped me on an aircraft carrier, and then the aircraft carrier dropped me off in the middle of, you know, Las Vegas or, I don't know, Reno. And I had just one suitcase and $5. And from there, I lifted myself up. That's not the arc of my life. It would be a lie to tell you that. Now, don't get me wrong. It's not like I'm, you know, Eric or Donald Trump Jr., born with a silver platter. But I definitely didn't have that kind of trauma. Now, having said that, Basically, I think there's two factors. One is I've been very fortunate. Not because, you know, I necessarily deserved it or whatever, but it's just I've been lucky. I've been lucky that that sixth grade teacher convinced my parents to send me to a different school. I was lucky that my parents were willing to sacrifice to send me to that school. I was lucky to get into that school. Then I was lucky to get into Stanford because I was in that school. And then at Stanford, I met someone who eventually gave me my job at Apple. So all of this is kind of serendipity. It's not exactly like I deserved it or, you know, whatever. And so that's one side. But, you know, get lucky is not a strategy. On the other hand, having been dealt this lucky deck, I definitely capitalized it. And I capitalized it by working hard and not taking it for granted and seizing the day.
You certainly did. I mean, I know you say it's not a big deal, like the stuff you've done, but it seems like you've lived multiple lifetimes in the span of one life. You go on to the next thing and the next thing and the next thing. One of the kids wanted to know, can you discuss when you were working in graphic design? What is that like? Because this child in South America, he's interested in pursuing that.
Well, I, as in the marketing of Canva, as opposed to using Canva as a designer. Now, I do make my own slides with Canva. So Canva has hundreds of 16x9 presentation templates, and I use one of them for all my speeches. And that's the key to Canva. The key to Canva is that you don't have to be a quote designer to design. But I can't tell you that I'm a professional graphic artist who makes a living doing graphic design. I use Canva in my speaking and in my writing and in my life, but I am not a professional designer.
Well, you guys can look into pursuing that on your own. One of our kids wanted to know, can you explain, where do you get the idea? You've written 14 books. Where do you get the idea for writing these books, authoring these books?
Yeah, you know, so here's the truth. So my first book was called The Macintosh Way. And that was kind of obvious because at the time, the Macintosh was a breakthrough computer, and we were trying to make the right computer and do it the right way. So that was obvious. Before I had read a book called The Soul of a New Machine, which is about the people at, none of you will remember this company, but there's a company called Data, I think it was Data General. See, I can't even remember the company. So somebody wrote a book about what it was like to be inside a company as they were creating a new mini computer. And I read that and I said, I'm going to write the equivalent of what it was inside Apple to create the first personal computer built on a graphical user interface. So that was book number one. And at the time when I finished book number one, I said, okay, I have said everything I know. That's my first and last book. Now, 14 books later, I guess I was wrong. And so what happens is that I write a book and then just things go on for a long time. And then at one point I just decide, huh, here's an interesting subject. I'll write another book. And like right now, I'm about to write my 16th book, and my 16th book is going to be, I'm not sure about the title yet, but it's going to be along the lines of how to be remarkable. And it's not Guy Kawasaki telling you how to be remarkable because he's so freaking remarkable. It's Guy Kawasaki telling you what Jane Goodall and Neil deGrasse Tyson and Steve Wozniak said about how to be remarkable. So I'm just a channel or a vessel that's bringing their remarkableness to you.
And you, but hey, I'm going to say you're a remarkable guy. I've heard your podcast. I love them. And so one of the kids wanted to know, can you tell us the process of becoming an evangelist?
Okay. Wait,
how can we access, how can we access and train such skillful communication?
Huh? Somebody walked into my Somebody walked into, I'm in a barn right now. Seriously. Somebody just walked in and then they walked out. Well, I guess if I get murdered right now live on Zoom, this will go viral. But anyway, so what was the question? Sorry.
Lots going on here. So one of the kids wanted to know, can you explain the process of becoming an evangelist and how?
Process of becoming an evangelist. Yeah. Well, you know, I think step number one and probably the hardest is finding something that's good news. So Macintosh was good news, increased people's creativity and productivity. And let's see, you know, Canva, good news, increased people's ability to communicate, democratizing design. So I think when you find something or you create something that is good news, you know, that's 90% of it. A lot of people ask me, so are evangelists born or made? I think they're made. And, you know, what's the hard part about evangelism? Well, it's finding something worth evangelizing. There's lots of stuff in the world that you cannot evangelize because it's frankly not good news. Now, having said that, I don't want to give the impression that evangelism is the only way to succeed, because there are other ways. It's just one way, and the way that I happen to know.
You just answered like four different questions one after another in that one answer. So thank you for that. One of the students, because again, these students are all over the world, and this student in Germany wants to know, what is it like working in Silicon Valley?
Well, that is an interesting question, because it's not like there's one unified experience, right? So working at Google is different than Facebook, and it sure as hell is different from working at Twitter today, right? Because I don't know what working at Twitter is like today. It's a bizarre place. Yeah, but generally speaking, in Silicon Valley, you know, the attitude is that you can make the world a better place. Technology is cool. And I'm giving you sort of the positive spin on it. There are lots of people who give you the negative spin on working Silicon Valley, that, you know, we're driven by money, it's insipid, a bunch of people are just vesting in place, and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. But I'm telling you, from my standpoint, there's no better place. And I give you a caveat, though. Because of the internet and things like Zoom and generally just the level of technology today, Silicon Valley is not necessarily a physical place. Silicon Valley, I think, is more of a mindset. It is a mindset that great products can change the world. You can change the world. A person can change the world. And that's very different from a mindset of I'm just a cog in a wheel inside a factory. I'm going to put 20 years in, and at the end, I'm going to retire. That's not the attitude in Silicon Valley.
That is so wonderful to hear, because there's some that everyone outside, they have a perception. And so that's really cool to hear. So before we let you go, I know this is, we got kind of time winding down because we have kids all over. So I wanted to know, for the final question, what kind of advice would you have for these kids as they go off into the world and figure out what they want to pursue?
Okay. So contrary to what your parents and your teachers may be telling you, I'll give you a little perspective. I think that if you're a student today, over the course of your career, you may have 5, 10, maybe even 15 jobs, okay? I, by contrast, you know, had about 4 jobs over 40 years, but this is a different world today. And so I don't want you to be so concerned and obsessed about finding the perfect first job, because frankly, you're probably not going to remember what your first job was. And so I think, you know, take a chill pill and pursue things that interest you, knowing that, you know, it's going to be another 14 jobs in my life. And so don't be, you know, don't think, oh my God, you know, I got to go to an Ivy League school. I have to get a degree in computer science, and I need to have a summer internship at Goldman Sachs, or I need a summer internship with McKinsey. And after that, I'm going to go get a Harvard MBA. And then I'm going to get this perfect job. And then I'm going to be a partner at Goldman Sachs making $20 million a year. It just will not work out that way. And so I could make the case. Well, we'll take extreme examples. So in a perfect world, everybody would like to have the perfect first job. You go to work for the next Google. You're 22 years old. You go to work for the next Google. It goes public 4 years later, and now you're 25, 26, and you're worth $50 million. Okay, that's one plan. Now let's take the flip side. You go to work, and I'll take the worst case. You go to work for Theranos. All right. So you go to work for Theranos, and a few years into it, you discover that, the machine doesn't work. In fact, there is no machine, and you can't just put a drop of blood in a machine and get a diagnostic for everything. And the CEO has not been truthful this whole time. And in fact, the CEO just got arrested for fraud, et cetera, et cetera. Now, you might make the case, oh my God, that's the worst experience possible. You worked to work for a failed company. Your boss was indicted and, convicted. And now you're out of a job and you're tainted by having worked for Theranos, which did all this kind of stuff, right? I mean, can I describe a more worst case than that? Like Lehman Brothers, Theranos, you name it, maybe Twitter. But I would make the case that over the course of your lifetime, the Theranos experience may be one of the most valuable things you ever do, because you will see greed in action. You will see fraud in action. You will see lying in action. You will see, manipulative dictatorship kind of management. You'll see a lot of bad things that hopefully will provide a valuable lesson so that someday you recognize this and don't go to work for another company like that. And even better, someday if you start your own company, you will remember that year you worked in Theranos where people knew it wasn't working, but no one had the courage except a couple of whistleblowers to tell the emperor that the emperor or empress had no clothes. And you'll remember that experience. And I hope as a CEO, you will encourage open communication. The people who work for you tell you, you know what? There's bugs. We cannot ship. You know what? This isn't working. You know what? This is. And so this is a very long answer to what you thought was probably an easy, soft question. But that's how it is. So my advice to you is don't sweat the first few jobs. All you want to do is collect a lot of data. And at some point with all that data, then you're going to make a decision.
You got it. And we can't thank you enough for this invaluable advice. I mean, I know that you don't think that, I know you're very humble and you're very modest, but you're that catalyst that's connected with all these brilliant people throughout decades of business, entrepreneurship, and technology. So before we let you go, I usually do this, and I'm not sure with the hearing thing if I can do this, but we usually say goodbye and thank you to our guests before I end this. We're not going to do that this time. So if you guys want to just give a thumbs up to Guy, because we have some audio issues.
Thank you very much. All the best to you, wherever you are. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. We appreciate you, sir.